Self-loathing on the left in the U.S. and Europe. We'll talk about it on The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are the uprising. With Scott Cosenza and Tim Donner.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
Hey, a president! Can you believe it?
I love the poorly educated.
The voters have guaranteed themselves slavery, economic disaster.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
I have never met with Russians.
Our elected representatives can abuse subordinates and then secretly use a slush fund of our money to pay them off.
Black Lives Matter, the Antifa movement, are interested in preserving the fabric of America.
This is The Uprising, the podcast of LibertyNation.com. Tim Donner with you this week. And while the left has increasingly expressed their hatred of conservatives and the America so many of us grew up in, they have also revealed their hatred of themselves. Why, you say? Well, you can see it in their denigration of traditional values and their deconstruction of American culture, their single-minded desire to tear down to the foundation the very values, culture, and freedoms which make them who they are. I wrote about this on LibertyNation.com this week, but the phenomenon is not limited to the U.S. We see the same manner of self-loathing in Europe and England, since they fancy themselves as distinct and separate from continental Europe. And joining us from London is LibertyNation.com managing editor Mark Angelides. Welcome, Mark.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. You know, Mark, you can see the stark contrast between the left and the right in the last two U.S. presidential elections. Conservatives believed it vital to the future of the country that Barack Obama be defeated by Mitt Romney in 2012, and they were in despair when Obama was reelected. They really were, but they did not challenge the legitimacy of the outcome or try to throw the kitchen sink at Obama or try to impeach him. But in 2016, we had the reverse, with the left declaring the election of Donald Trump as the end of the world as we know it. They started calling for his impeachment the day after he was elected, and they've now done everything to not just overturn the election, but to double down on their deconstruction of the things that have always defined America and thus themselves. Do I have this right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not just an American issue. It's a worldwide issue. Well, let's say a Western worldwide issue that focuses specifically on the things that hold society together, the family unit being a huge one, the idea of pride in your nation, pride in your community. It's a worldwide issue.
Well, no question about it, and it seems that the manifestation of self-loathing amongst the European left is the extent to which the EU employs an iron fist in enforcing politically correct solutions on their member states designed not to protect, but diminish the distinct cultures that have made these individual countries what they are.
Yeah, that's really so very true. I mean, it's to the point where over the London City Hall with London Mayor Sadiq Khan, that they're flying the European flag. When Angela Merkel, not in the most recent elections, but in the last ones when she won, one of her cabinet members was waving a German flag, and she strode over to him, ripped it out of his hands, and threw it away. That it's almost as though they're ashamed of their nations, of our nations. It's there's a series of laws in place that mean that we cannot distinguish for work purposes, for preferential purposes, people from our own country as opposed to people from other countries. The full force of the law, the European law, which is now supreme in the UK, hopefully not for much longer, but the full force of the European law is brought to weight against the nations, against their own interests. And it's a very, very sad day where, I mean, Europe has such a rich cultural history with so many different people with different languages and different customs and ideas.
Indeed.
And they're all being forced to fit into one size fits all. Mm-hmm. And it's an utter disgrace. Also, they can sell more Starbucks coffee.
Well, they are succeeding to that extent, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, they are.
Let's talk a little bit about German Chancellor Angela Merkel, or Angela Merkel, if you want to sound sophisticated. She has been the sort of de facto leader of the European Union over these last years. So let me ask you, what exactly was Angela Merkel thinking when she accepted almost 2 million refugees, primarily from Syria, seeming not to understand how this influx of Muslims would fundamentally change Germany? It was as if she didn't believe enough in her own country and culture to place reasonable restrictions on the flood of refugees.
Well, to be honest, I think that they grossly underestimated what was going to happen. For example, when the Ascension countries joined the European Union, because Britain is not and was not part of the Schengen zone, Schengen agreement, it meant that there was a delayed period of time until the people from these other eight countries could come to the UK with as many rights as a British passport holder. And what happened was the government of the day said that, well, we're expecting, from all of these countries put together, we're expecting about 13,000.
Wow.
Which was grossly underestimated. Now, what happened with, again, it was almost exactly the same kind of mistake. When Angela Merkel, with the help of the EU Commission, they decided to redefine what makes a refugee. So previously, as is still the same in your country as in mine, it's an international standard that says, you know, you've got to be either fleeing war or terror, and you've got to stop in the first safe country, which is where you should declare yourself for asylum. But they changed that, and they said anybody who's fleeing poverty. So what that did was,
that's a pretty broad classification. People fleeing poverty.
Yeah. So basically, it means anybody who is less well off than the country in which they want to travel to has an automatic right to claim asylum, or refugee status at least. And so what happened was people started coming in, and when we were looking up, not me personally, because I'm quite a cynic at the best of times, but most people were looking on, think, wow, there's a lot of Syrians getting out of there. Well done to them for making a break for freedom. But then they realized that hardly any of them are actually, percentage-wise, it's not just Syrians, it's everybody from basically countries that are financially poorer. And so they're literally flooding in. People are dying on boats coming over. And I mean, I know the phrase "the blood is on their hands" is one that's being much used today, especially in relation to all the things happening in America. But when you tell people that you can come here, you'll be granted refugee status simply from being from a poorer country, and people get on the boat, these unfit boats with people, smugglers, who essentially want to sink the boat so they can't be traced back. The blood is on their hands. There's the people who've died on the boats crossing. It's terrible. But what Merkel did then is, instead of saying, this is enough, we've got too many people here, she carried on and carried on. Now, she did say at one point a little while ago that this was possibly a mistake. She goes, made a huge mistake.
You think?
Yeah, she said this, but then this was coming up to an election. And it was the exact election in which the Alternative for Deutschland, the AfD, won 93 seats.
The most that a nationalist, so-called nationalist party has won since the end of World War II.
Absolutely. So you have to wonder, was she thinking, if I say these words, will I get slightly more votes? And I think the answer we're looking at here is quite a clear yes. She said that it was a mistake purely for votes. I mean, many years ago, she even said that, multiculturalism, it was a big mistake. She's even said this herself. This was years ago. And then proceeded to say, come one, come all. So I believe any words from her mouth that even smack of a touch of reality are for pure election winning purposes.
It sort of reminds me when Barack Obama promoted his stimulus plan on the basis of shovel ready jobs. And then when the jobs didn't materialize, he admitted, well, there really aren't any shovel ready jobs. I mean, I can imagine if Trump had done that, what would have happened? But let me ask you this. Will Europe ever be the same after Merkel's decision to admit all those refugees while the native population in her country and the rest of Europe continues to shrink?
Well, here's the thing. We've had Muslim populations, communities, especially in my country, for many years, and that there's been so few problems up until recent years. So few problems. It's, they're British Muslims. But what happens is when you get people coming in en masse from countries that still have a very unreformed view of what Islam should be, and they come in and they take over the local mosques and they're preaching a very, very violent form, very fundamentalist form of Islam, like Wahhabism, for example. And they take over the local mosques and the community starts to react to that. And so they become more fundamentalist in many ways.
And they're not discouraged. From radicalizing. They're not discouraged from taking on the most radical sect of Islam.
Yeah, that is a major issue, especially as many of the Wahhabist mosques are paid for by some fairly dubious foreign powers, which is a bit of a shame. But to answer your question, will it ever be the same again? Yeah, it certainly can be if we stop Merkel's madness today. If we stop it right now, then what will happen is, purely from an economic standpoint, people will have to start integrating into the culture again. Like the first groups of Muslims that came to the UK, they integrated into the culture, played cricket, some of them particularly well, I have to say, and became British. Now, what needs to happen is we need to stop more coming in from the more aggressive Islamic countries. And if that happens, then yes, Europe will repair itself because Europe is nothing more than a sum of its people and its cultures. And so while the balance is still there, it can still repair itself.
So what you're saying is there's still a chance to assimilate this influx of Muslims into the cultures of these individual countries, but the day is growing short on that, to be sure. And the decline of European culture sort of seems inevitable. And just looking at the birth rates of all the individual countries below replacement rate, meaning the average couple, two people, are spawning less than two children. So the native population continues to shrink while the Muslim population continues to grow. And I know you have drilled down and done a deep dive on some of the numbers that support this.
Yeah, absolutely. So the replacement rates, country to country, is different across Europe, but around 1.6, which actually isn't a bad place to be, especially when you consider the population explosion that the world's overseen in the last 40 years or so. But the issue is not so much that people aren't wanting to have children. For example, there was a CEBR research poll, which was huge and wide ranging. And from their respondents, it was less than 5% said that they didn't want any children, but more than 75% said that they would like to have at least two children. But what's happening is people aren't having the children that they would like to have. And the reason for this is certainly not a fertility thing that is often pushed by the self-hating left. Because abortions, regardless of your stance on them, 70% of the abortions carried out in the UK are from women who are either married or with a partner in a long-term relationship. And that there's almost 200,000 abortions were carried out in the UK last year. So, I mean, it's certainly not a physical problem. But what's happened is since 2003, the actual cost of having a child has gone up to, well, up by 63%, which puts it at, and I mean, I'm not quite sure what this is in American money, but it's £227,000, which I guess that's...
I'm not going to do the conversion on the fly.
pushing about $350,000 to $400,000 US dollars to have a child. That's for the first child. The second one's a little bit cheaper because many people use hand-me-down items and things. But I mean, that's an unaffordable amount for almost anybody, unless, and here's the kicker, unless you're on welfare benefits,
which so much of Europe is. I mean,
this is the thing.
I mean, they're spawning. I mean, throughout Europe, you have the same phenomenon of almost perpetual low growth, high unemployment economies, and with governments confiscating so much of the earnings of its people, there's not enough money left to raise children the way people want to. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that is exactly it. I mean, if you look at you see many of the, just for example, take Sweden, which is very liberal country. I mean, even in their most positive spin, Swedish government suggests that of the newly arrived migrants, 75% of them would never work a single day. So that's 75% of the new migrants that have come in. They're not going to work, so they're not going to pay taxes, which means, ergo, they're going to be on benefits or welfares, as we call it. And they will have children because they will not be paying for those children. So they can afford to have as many as they want, which is, you know, is great for them. You know, everybody likes to have lots of kids around. It's wonderful. But the people that do actually work cannot afford to have more than one, two children if they're lucky or if they're willing to make a lot of sacrifices in their life.
Well, I mean, there are countries in Europe where it actually doesn't pay to work, where you can actually make as much money not working as you can working, because everybody is offered, for example, in Denmark, a guaranteed minimum income. And so there is little incentive to work. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just for an example, there was a huge uproar in England, Britain, a few years ago when the government of the day, which is unfortunately still the same government, decided to put a fiscal cap on what we call housing benefit. Now, for the American listeners, a housing benefit is if you are unable to pay rent on a place to live, or if you just don't have a job, basically, the government will provide you a certain amount of cash. Well, not directly to you, but in the form of a check that can go to a landlord to pay rent. So if you can live in a house without ever actually paying a penny yourself. Now, there was a huge uproar when a cap on this was proposed, and that cap was £25,000 per year. So $40,000, just under $40,000 a year that you can receive just for rent for your house if you don't work. And people were angry that a cap was being imposed on this, saying, oh, you're pushing poor families out into the streets. $40,000 a year for your rent? Move house, you know, go somewhere cheaper.
I mean, all of these are the failure to protect the cultural underpinnings of individual nations is really a sign of self-loathing, of a failure to embrace and protect the cultures that have made you what you are. I mean, and I think that a people that is taught, as we are in the U.S., as young Americans are now being taught to hate their country, I'm not saying the same thing happens in Europe distinctively. Well, I'm sure it does. You know better than me, but it's the same phenomenon of degrading everything that makes you who you are. And we see this phenomenon in the U.S. and we see it in Europe. And I think when we drill down to the baseline level, all the hatred that they spew towards conservatives, towards the nationalists, towards people who want to protect their own culture and their own heritage. I mean, these are disturbing signs in raising generations of self-loathing young people who want to trash all the things that have made them what they are.
Yeah, I mean, it is absolutely of no surprise to anybody who can see this that mental health issues are on the rise and that more funding is needed for depression and anxiety in young kids. Well, of course, more work is needed with them because they're being told that they're not worthy, that their whole culture, their whole history, the things, as you say, the things that make them themselves are unworthy, wrong, or worthy of denigration.
Illegitimate.
It's terrible. And so, of course, we've got the growing mental health epidemic. I mean, I wonder why. Is anybody who can examine this really surprised?
And on that uplifting note, we'll thank you for joining us, Mark. Appreciate it. Mark Angelides, managing editor for LibertyNation.com, joining us from London. Exhausted by all the fake news? Tired with the spin rooms? At Liberty Nation, our aim is to bring you the facts first. The Media Bias Watch site has ranked Liberty Nation very high for factual content. So, for more news and analysis without the propaganda, click on our website at LibertyNation.com. Sign up for our daily briefing on the homepage to get your refreshing daily dose of reality. I'm Tim Donner, and this is The Uprising, the podcast of LibertyNation.com.